I'd like to call the Jobs, Agriculture, and Rural Development Committee to order for Wednesday, February 20th. We have a few bills on our docket today. We're going to start with Senator Reinhart, Senate File 367, and then we'll move on from there. So, Senator Reinhart, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. Mr. Chairman, do you want someone to move the bill before I start testifying, or?
Senator Reinhart, I think unless there's an amendment that you have, let's just have discussion on the bill, and then we'll move it at the end of your...
Mr. Chair, there should be an A1 amendment.
Okay. And this is an A1 author's amendment?
Yes.
To get the bill in the shape that you'd like it?
Yep.
Senator Herr would like to move the A1 author's amendment. Should be coming around now. Senator Reinhart, council might be able to help a little bit as the amendment's coming around as to what the amendment actually does. Mr. Fuller?
Members, Senator Reinhart, I don't know if you had a chance to talk with Mr. Murphy, but on page 8 or page 9, line 4, I guess we just have a question of you whether that date for 2014 should be 2015. The reason being that if you look at the effective date on lines 9, 18, and 19, this tax is not going to be collected until January of 2014, which means there won't be any much revenue coming in between then and when the time the report is due, and to prepare the report should take time. So unless you want a really small slice of time, you know, that's, I don't know the answer. I see you're conferring.
Senator Reinhart.
I would welcome that additional change.
So just tell them it's incorporated.
Okay. We'll incorporate that in the A1 amendment. So with that, Senator Herr renews his motion on the A1 author's amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Senator Reinhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, I'm going to be brief. I know we've got a couple testifiers. Basically, what this bill does is extend the 911 fee that we currently pay on landlines, and we currently pay on, if you have a cell phone plan that's a year contract or two-year contract, you're paying the fee. And I think, members, you know that the 911 fee is the primary way in which we pay for the ARMR system, the state's emergency communications backbone network around the state. Where we have a gap is on people that buy the prepaid cards, the refillable cards, the third vendors, the minor network month-by-month plans that bounce off of the major carrier's network. So that's what the bill proposes to do. Mr. Chairman and committee members, I will let you know we have three more stops to make, and I'm well aware that we're working with the folks that represent small business vendors who have some concerns about getting reimbursed for the cost of collecting this fee and some of the technical things they need to do. And the Department of Revenue has some concerns about their responsibilities in collecting and accounting for and then shipping back out that fee. So, but Mr. Chair, with your permission, I'm going to ask Patrick Fusick with Sprint to say a few words about the bill.
Thank you, Senator Reinhart. Mr. Fusick, welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Patrick Fusick. I'm the Director of State Government Affairs for Sprint, and I'm pleased to be here before you today and appreciate the opportunity to present comments on Senate File 367. Today I'm speaking on behalf of not only Sprint, but also the cellular telephone industry, carriers like AT&T, Verizon, U.S. Cellular, TracFone, Verizon. We all support this legislation, as we have in numerous other states. To date, 26 states have passed similar legislation. And the focus, as Senator Reinhart pointed out, is to on the prepaid side of our industry, which is a very growing portion of our industry, up to 22% of the industry now, wireless products are prepaid. So that's becoming a niche that a lot of the folks are finding a little more comfortable. It doesn't have a contract and so forth. So the market share is growing in that sector. And the result is that those folks aren't paying into 911 fees. When those original state laws were passed regarding, you had your original 911, then E911 or Enhance, where wireless pays in, prepaid wasn't even around at those times. So now we're in a situation where they're benefiting from being able to call 911, but not actually contributing to the state's fund. So the focus of this legislation and what has been done in other states is to equitably have them pay into the system, just like those of us that have a postpaid wireless phone or a landline are doing currently. One of the reasons we're looking at this is in the industry, 70% of what we sell as far as our prepaid products are done through what we call third-party vendors. So the Best Buys, the Walmarts, those are the retailers that we will send millions of products, cards, calling cards to those vendors. They'll ship them around the nation and distribute them. So we're not touching the end retail transaction, so we couldn't personally, as a company, try to make that assessment at the point of sale. That's what this legislation does. So when a person goes into a retailer, whether it's a Best Buy or a small grocery store, and purchases a prepaid product, they would be assessed 80 cents on that purchase, which is then redeemed, or sent into the Department of Revenue and used, as we've heard, to help support public safety, which we all obviously agree that that's something that's very important for the state of Minnesota. So we want to make sure that those funds are going to where they're needed. The bill that is before you is modeled after legislation or a model bill actually from NCSL, the National Conference of State Legislators. And 3 years ago, we worked with NCSL and all the interested parties to develop that. And like I said, since that time, about 26 different states have passed bills of this nature. Some of them have adjusted, you know, certain portions of it, but the essence of shifting that to the end user to pay the E911 fee at that point of sale is the outcome. You heard the Mr. Senator Reinhart say that there's some concerns within some of the folks that are retailers. We're retailers, too, and we know that we've had to take on the obligation of collecting and remitting this as part of the sales tax. So we understand their concerns. There is a 3% allowance in the bill for vendors to recoup their costs for remitting and collecting and remitting the fees. So we share those concerns, but also would want to point out to the committee that there's obviously a business interest in selling these products. I mean, if it becomes too unmanageable or difficult as far as the costs go, no one's forcing them to do that. It's their choice to sell those type of products. So, with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions and just would ask for support of the legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Busick. Are there any questions from committee members? I would just, Senator Dames.
Just a question on the fees. Currently now, that fee is now being currently collected on the prepaid cards. Is that correct? And it's being paid by, say, like yourself or Verizon or whatever. Is that correct or incorrect?
Mr. Senator, it varies a little bit by different company. For example, Sprint, and I can speak to us, what we do is we remit based on our number of prepaid customers we have in this state and other states that haven't gone to this point of sale type of legislation. So we are remitting. Not all companies are. So that's why there's a positive fiscal note to this bill, to the state, and that it would require any product that's at the point of sale would collect those dollars and remit them. So I know other carriers have a process of like decrementing some of the what they purchase or what the customer purchased, and then they take some money out of that to cover it that way. So it's a little bit, it's varied within the industry, but I can say on behalf of Sprint, we are remitting on behalf of our customers currently, but we think the better public policy would be for the end user to benefit, to pay where who's benefiting.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dames.
Just to follow up on that, is it not a requirement that these fees be paid by the providers?
Senator Reinhart?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. Was indicated earlier when the bill was originally written, this product wasn't envisioned. So as this product is this niche in the product market has grown up to now 20% of the overall market, some are collecting it, you know, large carriers especially, and some are not. And so the attempt of the bill is just to try to bring all of it in, because that was the intent of the legislature in putting the 911 fee in, was to help pay for the armor system in the backbone, so that local units could add on to it.
Mr. Chairman, just to
Mr. Murphy,
just to clarify that point, that when the 911 fee was originally enacted, it was enacted so the customer would pay the fee. We do not know who the customer is under this scenario with the prepaid phone card. So what this bill would do is establish who the consumer is that's responsible for paying the fee. That the major wireless carriers have taken upon themselves to pay the fee because we believe it's the responsible thing to do and that the statute is ambiguous at best as to whether we should or should not. We've chosen to take the position that we should. Some wholesalers have taken the position that the statute's unclear and have taken the position that they are not responsible for paying the fee. This legislation would require them to pay the fee by clarifying who the customer is. Hope that wasn't too circular.
Thank you, Senator Dames.
Mr. Chair, I know we have another testifier. Jamie Poole is working with us on behalf of the small retailers, and as I indicated, we know we've got a couple areas of concern that we're going to continue to work on. So, Ms. Poole.
Ms. Poole, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you very much. I am Jamie Poole, president of the Minnesota Grocers Association, and I'm here also today to speak to Senate File 367 and voice our concerns. The MGA is a state trade association. We represent the retail food industry for over 115 years. We have over 200 retail members with 1,100 locations statewide. We employ over 125,000 union and non-union Minnesotans. Minnesota is blessed in that we have a very unique culture. We have hundreds of small, independent, locally owned grocery and convenience stores who are the cornerstones of their community. They create jobs, support the local charities, provide a safe and responsible shopping experience. The Minnesota food retail industry has concerns with this bill in its current form. Today's system holds a few national wireless carriers responsible for the collection and remittance of the E911 fee. This legislation shifts that responsibility to the local businesses selling the prepaid wireless cards on behalf of those national wireless carriers. As members of our local community, obviously we strongly support the funding of 911 service and acknowledge there needs to be mechanisms in place to support those programs. What we're talking about today is this E911 fee. And as you've heard, if you do have a mobile service, it is collected on your bill. When a card is prepaid, that is funded by some of the the wireless companies. Some are funding it, some are not. But once the prepaid card or the phone is activated, those wireless companies do have to process that activation, and they do know that it exists out there. This bill directly shifts the collection of these fees to the local grocers and convenience stores. It would require each retail transaction of a prepaid wireless service to collect. Right now, it's an 80-cent fee, an additional accelerated Minnesota fee, and that's up to 20 cents. And this will need to be itemized on the receipt, obviously, so the consumer knows what they're getting when they purchase that. This requires us to set up new systems and a new way of communicating with our customers as to why there's this added fee. The fees are then collected and submitted to the Department of Revenue, which we appreciate because we currently have our sales tax systems going in that way. But again, it creates a whole new system for the Department of Revenue and for the retailer. According to the language of the bill, the department shall post notice of any fee changes on its website at least 30 days in advance of the effective date of the fee change. It is the responsibility of the seller to monitor the department's website for notice of fee changes. Again, this creates an additional burden back to the retailer, as well as potential inconsistencies in the program if that fee is changing. This legislation does allow the retailer to retain 3% of the combined fee for administration, which is approximately 2-3% per transaction. There is no provision for an upfront cost, which we will experience that to get this system set up. And independent grocers and convenience stores will be affected with additional training, obviously consumer education, and equipment updates. We appreciate the opportunity to sell the prepaid wireless services, which allows for our customers to have a one-stop shopping option for all Minnesota families. Unfortunately, we also are concerned that the bill creates a competitive disadvantage with brick and mortar because right now the online purchases have the potential to not have to pay this fee, so again, it drives the consumer outside of our store. We've been working, as Senator said, that we've been working together to try and iron some of these things out, and we appreciate that acknowledgement and hope to continue that if this bill moves forward today. Thank you for your time, and I'll stand for questions.
Thank you very much, Ms. Poole. Other questions? Senator Weber, and then Senator Bonham. Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is for Mr. Fusick. Recently I bought a gift card, and they punched it in, and automatically it came up that I either paid a $3.95 activation fee or the amount of the card would be reduced in order for that to be covered. And of course, which is sort of a tricky way of getting me to pay the fee so I don't seem cheap when I give a $25 gift card. But in any event, isn't it? Wouldn't it be possible? to do the $25 phone card and have automatically have it reduced by that amount. And I recognize at some point you have to make the consumer aware that that's what is happening. What is the most economical system of getting this fee collected? Because I have great sympathy for both sides of this issue here, and I believe that it should be collected. I think you need to have a guaranteed system that legally entitles you to do what you need to do, but I also know that we also put on the backs of our retailers a lot of responsibilities. So,
Mr. Chairman, Senator, great question. Obviously, I mean, the folks you talked about buying the card for, if they didn't use it for a while, and that processing that you talked about is decrementing even further than that. I mean, sometime later down the road, they pulled out that card and wanted to use it, and found out there was no money on it. They'd really think something of you, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. So, obviously, that's not something that our company does. I know others in the industry do that, but you have a great question in that you shift the burden to that individual, but we think this point-of-sale process of collecting it at that purchase point, and as you heard from Mr. Murphy, there's no billing with the prepaid, so you can't do it that way like we do on postpaid. But I think that is the most economical method. I mean, again, as a retailer, we in our retail stores where we sell the same products, we would have to collect those. And now the states that this has happened, we've adjusted our systems and have probably had cost in there. Some states like Kansas, where I live, they don't have a sales tax fee for the vendor to when we collect and remit. So we couldn't get it on this legislation either. So, I mean, as far as the most economical process, I think it's at the point of sale, so the end user who's able to call 911 is actually is paying for that service.
Senator Reinhart.
Well, and Mr. Chair and Senator Weber, I mean, you're right at the heart of the issue, and I think the nut we're trying to crack as we move along here is that we have an intent to collect this to support our armor system. We have some vendors that are collecting it and paying for it themselves because they think that's kind of the intent of the law. And then we have, to come back to Senator Dames's question, we have other point of sales where it's not being collected at all because it's completely unclear. You know, and what we need to be sensitive to as we move this along is Ms. Poole's concerns on behalf of the people she represents, that we're not asking them to set up a new system, a new way of electronically accounting in that sale, and have no way to sort of reimburse those costs that we then the state are asking them to bear on our behalf. And I'm very sensitive to that.
Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Reinhart, I had a chance to review the bill, but more in concept, and so there's a piece of it that's new to me that I wasn't aware of, and that is this ability of the retailer to have some percent of fees mm-hmm. that they collect, and so I guess I'd like to understand that a little better. And then just to let you know, a concern that I have about this overall approach is that if you think about it, when we get charged, we're getting charged on a monthly basis, those of us who have this cell phone system, and so that takes place over 30 days. And the way that we're dealing with it in this situation is if you buy, let's say you don't have very much money, and so you just buy a little bit at a time, mm-hmm. you may get buy prepaid phone minutes four times in a month. You might every week, you know, you're just, you know, you get your paycheck, you just do a little bit. Mm-hmm. You'd actually be paying this fee four times. And yeah. So that is a concern I have in terms of the way that we're using this mechanism, particularly because it seems as though the consumer who tends to purchase the prepaid instead of having a phone, you know, generally is a more transient, perhaps less stable consumer.
Senator Reinhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Bonoff, I'll make a couple comments and then let others chime in. A couple things. First of all, that kind of idea of who's buying prepaid is quickly changing.
Okay.
I mean, I think that is kind of the old model, but people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s just don't want the two-year contract and so are opting for that mobility. Secondly, there is definitely that idea. And so the bill has, first of all, a floor. If your purchase is below a certain number of minutes and below a total cost, you're not going to pay the fee at all, to have some sensitivity to that. We don't want to do multiple charges on someone. And then thirdly, the bill right now allows for the retailer to withhold 3% of the sale in order to help reimburse for some of those administrative expenses. And I think Ms. Pohl, when she was testifying, hit on that point. But I think you said what that actually ends up being is 2 or 3% for the vendor. And I think she meant, like, on most sales, it's like 2 or 3 cents, which is why we do need to be sensitive to what do they actually need to help them stand up something new if we're going to ask them to do that.
Senator Bono. Senator Reinert, the good guys, those who are just paying this fee on their own, so I think Sprint does, and I don't know if AT&T, I believe. So then the question becomes, couldn't we just require all of them to do that rather than put the onus on the retailer?
Senator Reinert.
Mr. Chairman, the trouble with that is that we have this secondary market for the cards. So you might have an individual small grocer or an individual convenience store that's selling that product on behalf of, they're reselling basically on behalf of someone else. So they're not a Sprint employee in that store selling the card. They're, mom and pop that are selling it. And it's a way to bring people in, and it's another line of revenue for those small stores in our communities.
Senator Bono.
Mr. Chair, Senator Reinert, so I was assuming that AT&T Sprint was just taking it off of the total minutes allowed. So, in fact, it's in their retail store they're doing it.
Right. And Mr. Chairman, Senator Bonoff, and they're paying that out of their operating revenue. They're not deducting anything from the card being sold currently.
Gotcha.
Good questions. Senator Rood.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Reinert, I really appreciate the fact that you've made the commitment to work on this. I don't think you would have my support if I didn't know that you were working together on this. I really kind of take umbrage in the testimony that if it's too difficult for the small folks, they don't need to sell this. And so I hope that attitude as you work together changes. I think this is just one more burden on our small, greater Minnesota retailers, because that's who it affects. And so I will take you at your word that you are all going to work together in making this bill a little better.
Thank you, Senator Rood. Further comments from committee members? And this bill does have many stops.
Three more stops, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, at least. Four. Anyway, is there any motions from a committee member? All right. Senator Bonoff moves that Senate File 367 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the Committee on Transportation Policy. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. The motion prevails. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up, we're going to have a dual presentation on Senate File 226. That's a Senator Conan bill, as well as Senate File 285, a Senator Nelson bill. Senator Nelson or Senator Coonan, whoever wants to start, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee, and Senator Coonan for bringing forth his file and as well the bill that I have before you. They're extremely similar, so we're going to share testimony because basically it's the same bill. And what I might do is, if I could, Mr. Chair, I have an author's amendment. Okay. For Senate File 285 could be passed out. So I'd like to move the A1.
Okay, members, the amendment's coming around. It's the author's amendment. Senator Nelson moves the A1 author's amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would prefer. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Although there's an amendment to that amendment, did I pass that opportunity to amend my amendment?
Senator Nelson, you like an oral amendment?
Yes, an oral amendment to the A1, please.
Okay.
I'll do the oral amendment on to 285. So yeah, A1 right. Is fine as is. Excuse me.
Senator Nelson.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 285 is the Angel Investment Tax Credit for Greater Minnesota. This was a provision that was vetoed in the tax bill last year, but it has great support. And what I thought I would do is just give you a little bit of history about the Angel Investor Tax Credit. This bill, Angel Investor Tax Credit, was passed in 2010, and the intent was to encourage private investment in startup companies across the entire state. And at that time, the legislature appropriated $60 million over 5 years for this credit to make Minnesota business opportunities stand out to investors in the national landscape. Now, currently, the Angel Investor Tax Credit, though, is not meeting the goals of the whole state. In 2012, 95% of the qualifying investments under this statewide program were in the 7-county metro area. And I believe you have a chart in your folder that looks like this, where you can see what the history has been of the Angel Investor Tax Credit. So this bill and Senator Conan's bill seeks to make sure that there are more of those investments in greater Minnesota businesses. And so this bill increases the Angel Investor Tax Credit from 25%, as it currently is, to 50% for those investments in businesses that have their headquarters and over half of their employees and payroll in greater Minnesota. And greater Minnesota is defined as being outside the 7-county metro area. And with that, I'm wondering if we might be able to have our first testifier. I know that Mr. Newman needs to leave at 3:45. So might we call up our first testifier?
Senator Coon, are you okay with that?
Yeah, if there's a time limit here, go ahead.
Okay, all right. Okay, yeah. Mr. Newman, the City of Rochester, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, I'm Gary Newman. I'm the Assistant City Administrator for Rochester, and I've worked on economic development projects in Rochester for a long time. In the last 2 years, I've worked with 4 startup companies in the regenerative medicine area, resulting from patents from people at Mayo. And all of these companies have difficulty getting to the initial stage and then getting enough funding to get on to the final startup phase. And they usually have to layer a lot of different investment sources, some from the public sector and a lot from the private sector to get going. So we do believe the Angel Investment Tax Credit Program has been a terrific tool for the state of Minnesota. It's obviously from the statistics not having quite as much application in greater Minnesota. So from our perspective, we think it would be a very good tool for us in Rochester. I think it would be very good for all the other communities in greater Minnesota if you could increase the Angel Tax Credit. I think part of it is there's, you know, the amount of capital and the amount of number of investors is much greater, obviously, because of the size of the metro area than it is in greater Minnesota. And people are familiar with those areas and are more likely to put their investments in areas that they know best. So I do think, we've got an additional year of history than we had last year, and things haven't changed with less than 10% of the funding, less than 10% of the companies being in greater Minnesota. So I guess from our perspective, we would urge you to increase this, try this, and see what the results are. I suppose if it shows it's swinging too far the other direction, you could always change that, but I don't think that's likely to occur. Thank you very much. That's my comments.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Nelson.
Mr. Chair, at this time, could I add my oral amendment, please, to 285? I'd like to move on 4.33, line 4.33, change the amount to $17 million instead of 12. And on line 4.34, change the last date to January 1, 2016. And this addresses the actual historical fact that Mr. Newman referenced and that you can see on the handout that's in front of you. And that is, if you look at the history that we have, 10, 11, and 12, you will see that the total investment in Greater Minnesota has shrunk. It has not grown over that period of time. And so this amendment extends the Angel Investor Tax Credit for 1 year beyond current legislation, and then it also puts a little bit of additional funding into that.
Okay. Any questions for members on that?
You have it?
On, so 17,000 on 4.3, 17 million. Okay. So on line 4.33, Senator Nelson has an oral amendment that would change that amount to 17 million. And on line 4.34, she'll change the effective date till January 1st, 2016. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. The oral amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we'll turn it over to Senator Coonan.
Senator Coonan.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair. Do we need to vote on 285 here first, or do you want to come back and...
Let's hear from Senator Coonan, then we'll come back and we'll move them both. Okay.
Thank you.
Yep. Senator Coonan.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And there is one testifier yet, but I'll make a few comments about the bill I have before you. It's very similar to Senator Nelson's bill, except for a few differences. I didn't make any changes to the date that Angel Investment Credit expires. And so in my bill, it all ends at after December 31st of 2014. And I didn't add any new money to it, so there's no new cost. But other than that, it's very similar to Senator Nelson's bill in that it it moves up the investment credit amount that for businesses that qualify outside of the metro area, in other words, in greater Minnesota. What the bill does is create a new category of business under the tax credit law, and it would be called qualified Greater Minnesota businesses. And as Senator Nelson mentioned, they must be located outside the 7-county metropolitan area. And it also, like Senator Nelson's bill, moves the credit up to 50% for these qualified investments. And a qualified Greater Minnesota business must be headquartered in Greater Minnesota and have at least 51% of its payroll and employees located in Greater Minnesota. And the current law has those same recommendations, except instead of saying Greater Minnesota, it says State of Minnesota. And so it's very similar in that way. But again, this bill has no new money in it, and it expires under the current law when Angel Investor Credit expires. And we do have another testifier from the city of Owatonna, Mr. Thomas Knutz. I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that right. He can correct me if I'm wrong.
Mr. Mayor, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Tom Knutz, mayor of the great city of Owatonna, and I also sit on a committee in Owatonna called Partners for Economic Development. We meet on a weekly basis trying to attract new businesses to our community and also maintain existing businesses to our community. As it was mentioned earlier, $60 million have been appropriated over 5 years, but about 95% of that has stayed in the 7-county metropolitan area. Speaking from experience, that every time we get a business that we're talking about coming to southern Minnesota, especially Owatonna, they say, what can you offer from the city of Owatonna? And we have very limited tools that we can offer. We have TIF, and that probably covers a wide variety of the stuff that the city can offer. But they also say, what can you offer from the state? And we continue to look for state programs. We have Deed come in and talk to whatever Deed's got available. And every time Deed comes in, we talk about programs. But there's never any funding for those programs. So this is an excellent opportunity to provide an opportunity for Greater Minnesota to recruit new businesses to our community and provide some incentives for them to come. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Any questions from committee members? Senator Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Nelson, Senator Conan. I mentioned you, Senator Nelson. I actually, too, have authored an angel investment credit bill that should be put in perhaps tomorrow. And in that bill, what we did is put in an additional $20 million to fund that. You know, the governor didn't fund this in his budget. And I think with regard to the comments around the Twin Cities, it just shows you what hunger there is for this program and that, in fact, you know, this has been such a beneficial boon to the particularly the bioscience area and our ability to spur economic growth that I welcome, you know, all of these proposals, and I want to grow this in greater Minnesota. So I'm hopeful as we consider, and I was going to ask you two to be a co-author, Senator Sparks and Senator Nelson, and now you too, because I think that it would be great for us to work together and make sure that this is a program that we fully fund this session because we understand how important it is to economic growth.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Bonhoff, I appreciate those comments, and it is a program that works, and we just want to make sure it works for the whole state, which is why the Greater Minnesota piece is added specifically in this bill. One thing I neglected to mention to the committee, there is one addition in that A1 amendment, which specifically in the report to the legislature, it asks that report include the number of qualified small businesses that are women and minority owned. You might recall those who were on the jobs committee with me last session as we worked on this bill. That was one of the questions that Senator Torres Ray had asked, how many women and minority owned businesses are achieving this tax credit, this angel investor tax credit. So I have included that in this legislation as well. I think that's an important number for us to understand as well. So we want it to be great for all Minnesota, but for all businesses as well.
Thank you. Senator Bonhoff, thank you for your comments, and I would agree with you. I know that you've been a champion on this angel investor credit, and I'm going to certainly help you. And obviously, both to Senator Nelson and Senator Coonan, we're going to move this bill out of here and wish you good luck in taxes. And also, just so you know, Mr. Mayor, I appreciate your comment. I know you've done a lot of hard work and some good things in Owatonna, but just know that this committee is going to continue to work very hard in the area of economic development during this session, and we're hopeful to get you even more tools than this. So hang in there and keep fighting.
Mr. Chair, we appreciate every opportunity we have to have dollars available from the state. So thank you very, very much.
You're welcome. Okay. We'll move Senator Conan's bill first. So Senator Conan moves that Senate File 226 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion prevails. Thank you. And then Senator Nelson will move that Senate File 285 as amended be recommended to pass and move to the Committee on Taxes. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. The motion prevails. Thank you very much to the both of you.
Thank you.
Senator Herr, Senate File 380.
Hello, Mr. Chair, and
Senator Hertz.
Yep, got it. And senators, this bill, Senate 5380, is simply adding an additional member to the governor Workforce Development Council from the Adult Basic Education Programs. And the Adult Basic Education Program provide literacy and basic skill education to low-income adults to become self-sufficient and to participate effectively as worker and family members and citizen. The Governor Workforce Development Council would benefit greatly having an AEB member at the table because the council is charged with a variety of responsibility, including reviewing federal and state and local education job skill training program and making their recommendation to the governor and to the legislature. The council already have representatives from all other education programs, including K-12, University, and MinSCU, and a public library representative that was added by our notable colleague, Senator Nelson. And I'm honored that Senator Nelson is also a co-author to this bill. One reason that I'm, you know, glad to be a chief author of this bill is that due to the fact that I represent a very diverse district, with constituents that served by AEB as well. And secondly, I ran my platform based on this strengthening diversity and bring, you know, everyone or bring people together. That's what was brought me here to the Senate, and I'm proud of Minnesota for including someone of my background, and I'm sure that at the same time Minnesota can benefit greatly from the wide range of representation at the table. And I believe that it is important to include AEB representative on the council because they are the only education program that is not a member. This bill, Senate File 380, will ensure that all stakeholders are at the table. And therefore, Mr. Chair and a Senate colleague, I ask for your support. And with me here, I have Mr. Eric Nesheim, who represents Literacy Action Network, a statewide organization of ABE providers. And Mr. Nesheim was also a member of the council, and so he can share with you the importance of having AEB representation.
Thank you, Senator.
Mr. Nesheim, welcome to the committee.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, Senators. My name is Eric Nesheim. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Literacy Council, and today I represent the Literacy Action Network, which is the professional organization for adult basic education programs across the state. ABE serves over 74,000 Minnesotans and about 500 sites around the state. Through services such as GED, adult diploma, basic skills, English as a second language, family literacy, citizenship, transitions, post-secondary work training, etc. AB is increasingly providing a wide range of job skills and occupational prep programming, thus becoming an important player in the workforce development. I'm here to offer my testimony in support of Senate File 380, adding a non-voting ABE representative to the Governor's Workforce Development Council. As I'm sure many of you are aware, the GWDC's mission is to analyze and recommend workforce development policies to the governor and legislature towards talent development, resource alignment, and system effectiveness to ensure a globally competitive workforce for Minnesota. The governor's Workforce Development Council has a variety of duties. Senator Herr mentioned a couple, but it also has advising the governor on coordinating services and funds from the Workforce Investment Act, the Carl Perkins Vocational and Applied Technology Education Act, and the Adult Education Act. Over the past few years, I've had the pleasure of serving on the GWDC as a community nonprofit representative. My three-year term recently ended, but during my time on the council, I came to realize that a large portion of the discussion involved ABE and collaboration with ABE. I was able to answer questions and offer input and insight because I'm an ABE practitioner, and I was able to bring back valuable information and enhance collaboration and cooperation with my own field because I was on the group. And I was able to work more closely with MNSQ and DEED as well. Unfortunately, when my term ended, so did ABE's connection to the GWDC. I believe that the GWDC members and staff deeply valued having an ABE representative on the council, though unofficial. Additionally, it should be noted that Minnesota Fast Track, which is an effort that helps educationally underrepresented adults achieve success in well-paying careers, has occupied a great deal of the GWC's time over the past few years. This project is a collaborative effort between MNSQ, DEED, and Adult Basic Education. I believe that Fast Track will continue to play a large role in the future. However, one of the key players will go unrepresented on the council if a change isn't made. Federal law dictates the composition of the council, which is why we're proposing to include an ABE representative as a non-voting member. This would allow us to be at the table and included in broader discussions of education and workforce development, a discussion in which we play a large role. Again, we appreciate the opportunity to testify in favor of this bill, and thank you so much for your work towards making a greater Minnesota. I'm happy to answer questions.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Are there any questions from committee members? Seeing none, I think it's a good idea, Senator Hearn. Thanks for all your work for the Literacy Action Network as well. It sounds like you're on the right track here. So. If there's no further discussion, would anyone else like to be heard on this bill? If not, Senator Herr moves that Senate File 380 be recommended to pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion prevails. Thank you very much, Senator.
Thank you.
Pat, you're up. That'll be nice.
No way.
All right, Senator Sparks, you're back in the hot seat.
Okay, here we go.
We have Senate File 372 before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for the opportunity today to present Senate File 372, which changes the way Workers' Compensation Reinsurance Association charges premiums to its members, insurers, and self-insurers to make certain that those premiums are adequate to cover all the benefits the WCRA expects to pay for seriously injured workers. This approach has been endorsed by the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council, the Minnesota Self-Insurers Association, the Insurance Federation of Minnesota, the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, Organized Labor, and by the WCRA's Regulatory and Commissioner of Labor and Industry. With me today, members, is Buzz Cummings to explain how the changes in the law will work, and I would like to turn over to him if that's okay with you, Mr. Chair.
Sure. Mr. Cummings, please state your name for the record.
I am Buzz Cummings. I'm president of the Workers' Compensation Reinsurance Association. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm pleased to have an opportunity to testify in favor of Senate File 372. As Chairman Sparks indicated, the WCRA was formed by the legislature in 1979. We have as our members all 491 insurers and 161 self-insurers for workers' compensation reinsurance in Minnesota. That means that we provide protection against catastrophic injuries for all of the state's employers except the federal government, and more than 2.7 million, 7 million employees in the state of Minnesota. When the legislature created us, they set up a bifurcated premium system that we were to use in charging premium to our member companies. They put a cap on the amount that we could charge, which is called the pre-funded limit, which is contained in Chapter 79.35. We are proposing to eliminate that cap. The reason is this. This year we will charge $4 million to our member companies for claims that currently exceed that cap. Our actuaries project that that $4 million amount over the next 10 or 20 or 30 years will rise to $30 or $35 million. And our member companies have expressed some concern about having to pay those somewhat unpredictable but very rapidly increasing costs. So they have endorsed the proposal, which is contained in this bill, which is to eliminate the pre-funded limit, which will allow us to charge a premium for all of the claims that we expect to incur. The effect of this on our member companies will be to increase their premium cost annually by 2 to 3%. So it's a very predictable, very gradual increase in premiums, which over time will save our member companies significant amounts of money. As Senator Sparks indicated, the bill has been endorsed by all of the major players in the workers' compensation industry. I am not aware of any opposition to it and would appreciate your support.
Thank you, Mr. Cummings. Members, are there any questions? No questions? All right, seeing none, I'll take a motion.
Mr. Chair, then I would move that Senate File 372 be recommended to pass, and I think Commerce said they don't need to see it, so I believe it can go to the floor.
All right. Well, Senator Sparks has moved that Senate File 372 be recommended to pass to the floor. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The motion carries. With that said, the committee is adjourned. Thank you.
That's great.